And, of course, now we have a tax bill that has been voted on, voted into law by Congress, and signed into law by the president, and it is now on the books. And we have it in its final form after all the back and forth and speculation that surrounded it for a period of weeks. We now have it in essentially in its final form. There will be obviously technical corrections along the way, but it's basically it is what it is right now. And certainly it does bring in dramatic changes to the tax code, no question about that. And we have seven brackets still, but the numbers are different. The low bracket of 10% applies to income up to $9,525 for singles and $19,050 for marrieds, and that is a 10% bracket. And then gradually we have increases in brackets 12, 22, 24, 32, 35 until we get to the new top bracket of 37%, which is 2.6% lower in absolute terms than the old 39.6 top federal rate. The new rate 37%, which applies to 2018. And this means that if you're a single filer with income above $500,000, you will pay 37% on the income above that level. If you're married, filing jointly, then you will pay 37% on income above the $600,000 level. So let's see how that works. You're a single taxpayer, and you make $500,050 or $550,000. That 37% bracket would apply to the last $50,000 in adjusted gross income, that is, that you would report. A married couple filing jointly, if you made $650,000, then you'd pay it on that last $50,000 of adjusted gross income, amounts above $600,000. And by the way, there are indications in the tax code that at various spots, that you're better off getting divorced becoming friends because you'll save tax dollars. There are marriage penalties in the tax code, a number of them. And by the way, this makes no sense at all for the tax code to encourage you to get a divorce in order to save money, but that's the way it is. I'll give you an example, a specific example of a marriage penalty in the tax code now. Itemized deductions. The cap on the deduction for all state and local taxes of all kinds, income, property, sales, you name it. That's a $10,000 cap if you're single. If you happen to be married, it's a $10,000 cap. So if you get a divorce and become friends, you each could take, assuming you each had earned income, you each could take up to a $10,000 cap. In other words, you could double your deductibility for state and local taxes by getting a divorce and becoming friends. That's according to the tax code. That's the way the tax code is written. $10,000 for singles, $10,000 for married couples. So if you're single plus single, 10 plus 10 is 20. If you're married, 10 plus 0 is 10. It's the way they wrote it. Don't ask me why. I have no idea. I have no idea why they would allow the same amount for singles and marrieds, but that's what they did. Because that's not what they did with everything in the code. Not everything in the code is written that way. Look at the standard deduction. Standard deduction in 2018 increases to $12,000 for individuals, but $24,000 for joint filers. You see the disparity here? If it's the standard deduction, $12,000 for singles, $24,000 for married couples, but if it's the tax deduction for itemized taxes, it's $10,000 for singles or marrieds. This makes no sense, of course, but this is the way the code has been approved. So we're going to get pushed back on various things, although that's not going to be one of them. And should be interesting, but a lot of people basically got the shaft here And as I say, the people who really get the shaft should look at relocating as the obvious remedy for that problem, because you did definitely get the shaft. There is no question about that. Interest deductibility on mortgages still provides up to $750,000 in mortgage interest deductibility. That's less than it used to be. It used to be $1.1 million, up to $1 million on your primary mortgage and up to $100,000 on a home equity loan. Home equity loan interest is no longer tax deductible. So you can forget about that, but you still have $750,000 in mortgage interest liability that can be deducted. A lot of changes in the tax code, by the way. I mean, all over the place. There are still three rates for dividend and long-term capital gain taxability. Those rates are 0, 15, and 20. None of this includes the health care tax, which is additional. The 0% applies to single taxpayers earning up to $38,600 or marrieds earning up to $77,200. See, they did properly adjust that figure to reflect marrieds versus singles. The 15% bracket for singles, 38,600 up to $425,800, or marrieds, 77,200 up to $479,000. There's a marriage penalty there for sure. And 20% for singles, incomes over $425,800, and marrieds over $479,000. And so there's another example of a marriage penalty in the tax code. They're all over the place, by the way. And this does not count the Medicare surtax. That's the additional 3.8 Medicare surtax, which is still added on as it was before. They have not changed the Medicare surtax. Also, with reference to your contributions to your IRA, whether it be Roth or traditional, $5,500 up to age 50, $6,500 over age 50. And you have to look at the fine print to check all of the income limits, et cetera, that apply to those accounts. As far as 401k, 403, 457 contributions or self-employed 401ks, whether it be traditional or Roth, still very generous limits, $18,500 under the age of 50. 24-5 over the age of 50. And again, let me congratulate all of our Money Talk listeners that played a role in keeping these contribution limits where they are. You might remember that Kevin Brady had proposed that this be slashed to a very small contribution limit. And we talked about this in detail on our October 29th broadcast. And that very week, by November the 2nd, Kevin Brady had dropped it out of the proposal. And I have to credit all of our Money Talk listeners. There was a critical period there of 4 or 5 days when our Money Talk listeners let their view be known to these legislators, and they dropped that diabolical provision to almost completely eliminate. I mean, they were going to slash it by about 80 or 90%. And happily, that did not happen. So all of these changes are on the books, many other changes, too many to go into. But bottom line on all of this is a very, very dramatic change in the tax code. Please consider to take advantage of your 401k contributions and 403b, 457s. You know, the average 401k contribution in the U.S. is only 6%, which means the average is nowhere near the maximum. Now, there are limits on how much you can afford. I understand that. But I sometimes wonder whether people really are pushing the envelope on taking these deductions. Certainly, the no-brainer of all, you always, always want to take enough on your 401k in order to fully earn the free money that the company is giving away in the form of a matching contribution. So that is definitely a factor. Let's get Paul on the line in Mobile, Alabama. Paul, welcome to Money Talk.
Due to the popularity of index funds, is it possible to have an index fund bubble, and how would we identify it?
Well, you would identify that through the market because index funds invest in the market. If you have an S&P 500 or a total stock market index fund or a Russell 3000 or whatever, that represents the market. And so you would see that by what is happening in the market. And if you saw metrics in the market that told you it was a bubble, then that would mean you had a bubble in index funds because they are the market.
Now, again, in index funds and the S&P, the tech funds, how are they weighted in the S&P and are they overweighted?
Well, they're very substantial. Very substantial weighting of, not tech funds. You don't mean tech funds. I think you mean tech stocks, don't you?
Tech stocks.
Yeah. We wouldn't have any tech funds per se that would be in the S&P 500, but we certainly could have tech stocks. It's a very substantial weighting. I believe that the tech stocks as a percentage of the S&P 500, I think the number's right around 18%, which would mean that 82% of the S&P 500 would be invested elsewhere.